Tonight's program will consist chiefly of group dances. In the Institute, they precede individual movements, more complicated, and most of which are solo dances. In addition to the movements, we shall give a demonstration of supernatural phenomena, one of the subjects studied at the Gurdjieff School, a short explanation of which will be given later. The audience is asked not to applaud. After another long pause, Mr. de Hartmann came in with a small orchestra. Thomas de Hartmann, an aristocrat of the old school, had been a page at the Tsar's court, but had given up court life to devote his time to music. He was a brilliant pianist and composer. In his ballet, The Pink Flower, one of the first that Diaghilev produced in Moscow, Nijinsky first danced in public. Madame de Hartmann, in her 20s, had been a rising young opera singer. They met Gurdjieff in Moscow, and when the revolution came, literally left all and followed him over the mountains to Tiflis. I was struck by the way Mr. de Hartmann sat at the piano during the long pause, while the orchestra fidgeted and we, the audience, whispered tensely among ourselves, looking round to see who was there. Hartmann sat quite still, relaxed, yet taking everything in. At last the pupils came onto the stage and stood in lines. They were dressed in white tunics and trousers, the women's tunics long, the men's short. The women's hair was bound with gold fillets, not so the men's. In the Oriental dances which followed, both men and women wore appropriate and gorgeous costumes, designed by Gurdjieff, and based on those that were still worn in the East at the beginning of the century, some of which I myself had seen there. We shall now present some of the soiled supernatural phenomena also studied at the Institute. Mr. Gurdjieff puts all such phenomena into three categories: tricks, semi-tricks, and real supernatural phenomena. Tricks are done artificially, the performer pretending that they result from some source of natural force. Semi-tricks are not produced by sleight of hand, such as finding a hidden object blindfold. The third category, real phenomena, has as its basis laws which official science does not explain. As an example, let us take the well-known one of finding a hidden object. Something is hidden without the knowledge of a person who, though blindfolded, finds it through holding the hand of a member of the audience. The audience believes that the finder reads the thoughts of the other person. It is deceived. A phenomenon really takes place without any trick on the part of the performer, but it has nothing in common with transmission of thought. It is done through the reflection on our muscular system of our emotional experiences. Since there is a muscular reaction to every small vibration of the physical body, either by relaxation or contraction, it is possible with much practice to sense the most feeble vibrations, and these occur in the most stolid, even when the person is specially trying to subdue them. The hand which the blindfolded person holds responds unconsciously to its owner's knowledge of the hiding place. Its slight, almost imperceptible changes are a language which the medium interprets consciously if he is versed in the secret, instinctively if he is ignorant of the law, and which leads him to guess where the object is hidden. Similar phenomena produced through laws different from those to which they are ascribed, and at the same time not artificial in their essence, Gurdjieff calls semi-tricks. The third class of phenomena comprises those having as the basis of their manifestation laws, unexplained by official science, real supernatural phenomena. This has nothing to do with spiritualism, ghosts, and so forth. It is experiment in the reaction of a lower force to the impact of a higher force, or the reaction of pupils at a lower level to something given out from a higher level. The study of this class of phenomena is organized in the Institute very seriously and in full accordance with the methods of Western science. Not all members or pupils are admitted to it. Three conditions are necessary. The first is a wide and deep knowledge in some special branch. The second is a naturally persevering and skeptical mind. The third and most important is the necessary preliminary assurance of the future trustworthiness of the pupil to ensure that he will not abuse the knowledge he may thus acquire for the pursuit of egoistic aims. As regards the tricks, their study is considered necessary both for the future investigators of genuine phenomena and for every pupil of the Institute. Not only will their cognizance free a man from many superstitions, but it will also introduce in him a capacity for a critical observation indispensable to the study of real phenomena, which requires a perfectly impartial attitude and a judgment not burdened by pre-established beliefs. Among the present pupils, there are some who have worked for a long time and are already acquainted with these phenomena. There are also young pupils who are far from understanding them. Yet all take part in the experiments. The phenomena tonight will be given as if all were genuine, though in reality they will consist of the three kinds: tricks, half-tricks, and true supernatural phenomena. But their classification we shall leave to your discernment. The first, continued Oraj, is an exercise in memorizing, in remembering words. Some of the pupils will now go among you and collect words which may be in any language. Although we can remember and repeat up to 400 words at one sitting, we shall, in order not to weary you, take only 40. This is enough to give an idea of the possibility of developing the memory within a very short time. It must be pointed out that in the Gurdjieff system, teaching is seldom direct, but almost always indirect. It must be borne in mind that all the exercises are designed for the development of quickness of mind and attention, which again have as their aim the fundamental one of the harmonious development of the pupil. No special exercises are given for the development of memory. The results are obtained through general work and exercises which assist the development of the whole man. About 40 words were collected from the audience and read out once to the pupils on the stage, who then began to repeat them. And as far as I could tell, most of them repeated them correctly, although many of the words were very strange. Then Madame de Hartmann, sitting among the audience, said, "Now, if you will give me some numbers, I will transmit them by suggestion to the pupils." She faced the pupils who were on the stage, and in a few minutes they began to repeat the numbers which had been given. She continued, "The next exercise will be in the transmission of the names or shapes of objects at a distance by representation. We ask you to show or to name to the pupil who is sitting among you some object which you have on your person. The name or shape of it will then be guessed by the pupils on the stage." I had on my watch chain a small, rare greenstone tiki, which I had acquired in New Zealand. I showed it to her, and the pupils gave a recognizable description of it. When this was finished, Mr. de Hartmann said, "Now I ask you to suggest to the same pupil the name of any opera that ever existed in any part of the earth. She will transfer it to me, and I shall play an extract from it. Meanwhile, I ask those of you in the front row to keep very quiet." He then played extracts from a number of operas, some of which I had never heard of. All this time, the attention of the audience was drawn to the stage. They were completely mystified. Now, Mr. de Salzmann came on with an easel and large sheets of white paper, and Madame de Hartmann again sat in the audience. Oraj said, "We ask you to suggest in the same way any creature, from the tiniest microbe to the largest beast, existing or prehistoric, fish, flesh, or fowl, to the pupil sitting with you. She will transmit it to the artist on the stage, and he will draw it." Mr. de Salzmann then sketched the animals, etc., with surprising rapidity and exactness. With this, the evening's demonstration, which had lasted nearly 4 hours, came to an end. The tricks and half-tricks completely baffled me. As a show, they were much more difficult than many I had seen done by professionals. I might have thought that the pupils had been through courses of magic, but I was a little relieved and rather astonished to see among the pupils two who had been fellow members with me of the 1917 Club in London. All the same, it seemed like magic. And as I was to discover, it was magic, but real magic. As we were getting up to go, I remembered that there had been no demonstration of real phenomena, and I wondered why. It was not until very much later, after much study, that I realized there had indeed been a very definite demonstration of real phenomena. During the days that followed, I could think of nothing but the dances and the music, and I was somewhat bewildered by the feeling that I had found that for which I had sought so long.